Hello and welcome to this week's Liverpool Life Podcast. I'm Dan O'Brien and I'll be discussing the main news stories in Liverpool, plus a roundup of the latest sports headlines and what's happening in the city this week. Coming up, we'll see which famous entertainer has had a street named after him in the city.
I think you'd probably find it quite funny that a street had been named after him, but amazed that people would still remember him 20 years on.
Find out which councillor thinks Liverpool City Council are in hot water over their new expensive taps.
People who are astounded at the fact that we can spend £35,000 on 10 taps whilst we're closing social services departments, while the Labour Party are claiming they have to sell parks to raise money.
And we'll be telling you what the leader of the Avengers has to do with Liverpool.
I know this neighbourhood. I got beat up in that alley.
You just don't know when to give up.
I could do this all day.
Do you have something against running away?
Start running, they'll never let you stop.
But first, the late entertainer Roy Castle was honoured in Liverpool this week. Castle Street and the city centre will now be known as Roy Castle Street for the next 2 weeks. I spoke to Ben Matthews, who was at the unveiling. So tell me about the scenes down by the town hall.
Roy Castle's widow Fiona was joined by the founder and president of the Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation, Professor Ray Donnelly, and the Lord Mayor, Councillor Erica Kemp. They unveiled the updated street sign after the crowd was welcomed by a trumpeter in memory of Roy and his love of the trumpet, which he used to play often in jazz clubs and the like. It was said that those sessions playing in the jazz clubs, that he inhaled passive cigarette smoke, causing the cancer, as Roy never smoked himself.
What did Fiona have to say? I presume that she was very pleased.
Yeah, she was delighted how it that the city honoured her husband in this way. Here's Fiona now, Dan, speaking to me on the newly crowned Roy Castle Street.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? And I'm very proud of him. He was a very ordinary, down-to-earth man. He wasn't given to any sort of flights of fancy at all. He was very ordinary. So I think the fact that anybody ever recognised him was always very good. I think you'd probably find it quite funny that a street had been named after him. So to be honoured and remembered in this way is absolutely amazing.
She also said that she hopes the Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation will not have to exist in the future.
Well, that's good news. Tell me more about the charity.
It was set up in 1990 by Professor Ray Donnelly, and when Roy contracted the disease, he donated lots of money to it up to his death in 1994. The charity was then renamed after Roy and became what we know it as today.
What did the president of the charity have to say about the news?
Professor Ray Donnelly. He was obviously pleased and he told me what Roy would think of the charity and how it's changing people's lives.
He would be very proud, I think, of what's been achieved in his name since he died 20 years ago. So much has been done in terms of research and early detection of lung cancer, which is the key to improving the cure rates for lung cancer, to continue the research into early detection of lung cancer, and to work towards that day, which hopefully is not too far away, when lung cancer is put to where it belongs in the history books.
The Roy Castle Lung Cancer Foundation is the only charity in England dedicated solely to curing lung cancer, so it's clearly important to Professor Donnelly that he continue the good work of the charity in honour of Roy.
Thanks, that was Ben Matthews reporting at the unveiling of the newly named Roy Castle Street. If you would like to donate to the Roy Castle Lung Foundation, then please text ROYC20 to 70070 to donate £5 to this great cause. Liverpool City Council have been criticised spending £3,500 per tap in their new offices in the Cunard building. Hannah Kane has more on the story.
The criticism comes after the council need to save up to £156 million in cuts. Liberal Democrat leader Richard Kemp is concerned with the spending when services are being cut. He told JMU Journalism that people are astounded by this spending.
Well, I know how they're reacting because I've just turned on my Twitter account after doing about an hour and a half's work, and it is alive with people who are astounded at the fact that we can spend £35,000 on 10 taps whilst we're closing social services departments, while the Labour Party are claiming they have to sell parks to raise money. There are other things that will come to light in the redevelopment of this building which will show even more waste. And I think the people of Liverpool will think, as I do, that this is an absolute scandal. There are loads and loads of people who are very, very angry about the sell-off of our parks and green heritage. And this is just another straw in the bird that the council is carrying. There are real problems with the way this council does business.
Liverpool City Council told me that the figures were incorrect and will be considerably less than quoted. They also told us that the council will be making significant savings moving to the Cunard building.
The Church of England still allow female bishops for the first time ever after originally rejecting the idea in 2012. The issue of whether women should be allowed to become bishops has been controversy since the Synod approved female priests in 1992. Liverpool's new bishop, Paul Bayes, was installed this week. Director of Communications for the Diocese of Liverpool and Liverpool Cathedral, Stuart Hayes, tells us more.
And I know he's going to be delighted to see women colleagues alongside him. And I also know that he would be more than prepared to sort of wait a bit longer to get into the House of Lords if it means that a woman bishop is going to get ahead of him. So it's all good news, and it's really positive for the church. We've supported women in ministry. We've got a lot of excellent women priests in our diocese. But he is certainly very much in favour of women bishops. And I know one of the things he's going to be looking to do is, although we don't have room in our diocese at the moment for a full-time woman bishop, we are going to be trying, he's having conversations with people about how maybe we can get a woman bishop to support our work. Quite how that will work out, I don't know. But it's a real indication of his strong support for women in House of Bishops and women as bishops generally.
What does the BBC drama Peaky Blinders?
We're Peaky Blinders. We're not scared of coppers.
We will rip this city of his kind. Justice will be done.
If you want to be part of my organisation, you have to make sacrifices. I'm a businessman. I want to make my business successful. From now on, you do it my way.
And Marvel's blockbuster Captain America the First Avenger have in common.
I know this neighborhood. I got beat up in that alley.
You just don't know when to give up.
I could do this all day.
You have something against running away?
You start running, they'll never let you stop.
Well, they are both a few of the growing number of productions filming in Liverpool. The city has made an estimated £9 million from these productions in the last 12 months due to a new tax benefit offered by the city. Hannah Kane has more on the story.
Filmmakers and television companies have helped boost the Liverpool economy by £9 million this year. Liverpool Film Office say that 170 separate productions have been used in the city for shoots by the end of October this year. Advert, short films and entertainment programmes have all been filmed in the city, including the recent successful series of Scylla. The numbers have been down in previous years, but productions have been filming for longer periods in Liverpool and employing local crew. The Disney Channel made its first live-action production in the UK earlier this year. It was set in a Cheshire country house and filmed near Warrington. I spoke to Lynn Saunders, manager of the Liverpool Film Office, to find out more about this economy boost.
As a city, we can't determine taxes. However, the current government have introduced new tax incentives for feature film, for high-end drama, so drama that's worth over £1 million, and for games. And these incentives have actually made the UK more popular to film than any other places in Europe. And because of the exchange rate with the dollar, there's more production being made in England and in the UK than in Hollywood itself.
This year has seen the first Disney production filmed in the UK, with Evermore being filmed near Warrington. What do you think this means for the city?
It's great news for the city. It means more jobs. It means more opportunities. And for Lime, you know, they've been incredibly successful breaking into the American market. They also did a series for Nickelodeon, and I know that they've got others planned in the future. If I can continue to attract the production from outside with the large-scale Hollywood movies, then you've got a really vibrant Indigenous production base with Lion Pictures, LA Productions, Hurricane, to name a few. It means for, you know, graduates coming out of the universities people looking to develop careers in the film, within the film and TV sector. It means that there'll be more potential for that to happen and keep that talent in Liverpool without having to go to Media City or down south.
It's been reported in the media, people saying recently that there isn't a profession for people in the arts. What do you think that this 9 million economic boost does to counteract them claims?
What this boost means is that this is an industry that is not suffering from the recession. It's a growth area. It's not going to go away. We're celebrating our 25th year this year. If there was no productions coming in, we would have closed down a long time before now. And really, what the focus for me now, for the coming next 25 years and the future, is actually turn those stats into jobs.
Which ones do you think have brought more money into the city, the shorter feature films or the maybe less profile but longer running programmes?
In terms of broader economic benefit, the big movies are fantastic for raising profile, but they don't stay here for long. Then they pack up, disappear. It's a continuing drama series that are the ones that we would like to see more of. They're the ones that create more employment opportunities, but they're here for a longer period of time. So, you know, there's broader economic benefit. They'll stay in the hotels longer. They'll hire premises over a longer period and so on. So I suppose in the list of productions that filmed this year, Boyle's War has to be on the near the top. They were here for over 10 months. They filmed 3 feature-length episodes, which is kind of, you know, equivalent to 3 small movies. And they crewed extensively from the local supply chain here. Zilla, that was the highest grossing drama on ITV. And also for me, it was quite special because it was actually set in Liverpool. It was very much about Liverpool in the 1960s.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, bookmark jmu-journalism.org.uk.
A Liverpool educational charity are leading a new workshop about cyberbullying, CyberSense, to under 11s as part of National Anti-Bullying Week. Ariel Trust developed software to help teachers deal with anti-bullying issues in schools. This year, Anti-Bullying Week will highlight bullying of children with disabilities and special educational needs. Our reporter Camelia Nurani spoke to Helen Johnson, Assistant Director of the Ariel Trust, about how the charity will be getting involved with Anti-Bullying Week.
We've got a number of things on this week. It's actually a very, very busy week for us. The main thing is that we're launching the prototype of a cyberbullying resource for primary school children. We've been working with primary school children to make films about issues that they've come across, and we're developing that into some educational software, and we're launching a trial version of that this week and testing it out in schools in Liverpool, in the Wirral and in Knowsley.
Do you think cyberbullying has increased?
I think inevitably. I mean, it's a new form of bullying. You know, when I was at school, we didn't have any sort of digital technologies. Now young people have got they've got their mobile phones at quite young ages, and they're in constant touch with each other by text and on social media in a way that we never were. And it's another way that can therefore be used for bullying. And it's quite hidden because it's not like bullying in the classroom that a teacher can see. This can be happening in a kid's bedroom in the evening, but it's then impacting them on school. So I think it's definitely a growing trend, and it's definitely something that's happening younger, which is why we're developing this resource for primary school children, trying to give them the tools to respond to cyberbullying at an early age, hopefully before it's something that they're coming across.
This year's Anti-Bullying Week highlights children with hidden disabilities. Do you think they're more likely to be bullied at school?
I think that anybody that stands out as different is potentially a victim of bullying. Bullies pick on the weakest people. So, if anybody's got a hidden disability, I think the particular problem there is that there are certain types of bullying that teachers are looking out for.
Do you think schools do enough to support victims of bullies?
Schools have got lots of systems set up, but the government's asking them more and more to address particular issues of bullying, and they haven't necessarily got the skills and the information to deal with that. So that's one of the reasons that we've been developing our resources, is to support teachers. Every time there's an issue, the first response is, oh, let's get teachers to deal with that in schools, and teachers have only got a limited number of hours in the day.
For more on all the latest news, sport, entertainment, views and reviews, follow us on Twitter at JMU Journalism and come back often.
Where a kiss of a lock can kill you, and there's death in every tear,
and the Christmas bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom.
Well, tonight we'll reach in out and touching you.
The new Band-Aid single featuring the likes of Coldplay, U2 and One Direction was released this week to help raise money for the victims of Ebola.
African mothers not able to touch their babies when they're dying, when husbands and wives can't touch each other at their last moments. This is the most anti-human disease, but we can stop it, and we will stop it.
The original Band-Aid single, released 30 years ago, was to raise money for the starving in Ethiopia. Bob Geldof, up to then known publicly as the lead singer of the Boomtown Rats, was horrified by the depth of suffering and loss of life revealed by a television report and hit upon the idea for the charity single. Then, as now, this featured many of the top recording artists of the day. A little while after the release of the single, which became one of the biggest selling records in the UK, Bob Geldof spoke to Liverpool Live's Richard Rudin. He told Richard back in early 1985 that as this was the first of its kind, he had no template to use as to how the project should work. He was, though, very determined that all the money raised should go to the starving.
It consisted of me sitting in the press office in Phonogram, and that was, in fact, that was it. That was the whole Band-Aid thing. And because I had to go on tour with the Rats, it was then necessary for me to set up a structure. And to find out what it was they had to do, I had to go to Africa myself and find out what it was that they wanted me to get with the money. And we did. I did that specifically because I said that all of the money would get to the people who needed it. And that meant that we had to eliminate all overhead costs. I did the lot of it by myself, with the exception of producing the record, which was Midge's particular thing. And once I had done that, set up the trustees, who are all public men, and therefore no money can go out without their approval. That was to ensure that people's money was safe and was not spent stupidly. And then once we'd set up the trustees, I set up the people who would run the Band-Aid office, all volunteers, people who had written in, and we screened them. And the GLC in London gave us two offices and a warehouse. And once I had that, then I could remove myself from the immediate administrative thing, which is a dreadful bore anyway, and be most effective at what I do, i.e. being sort of the shock troops, you know, constantly going on at people, being the sort of source of the publicity.
You come over as a very anguished person, in fact. Is that right, do you think? I mean, are you a happy person?
I've never been content. I've been happy, but I think it's fleeting. I don't think that happiness is part of the scheme of things.
For you, or for all of us, in
general. In general, I think that it doesn't. To pursue that is kind of pursuing the rainbow, and peace and contentment, I'm not sure about. I would like it to be so, and I don't want to sound depressive, but I mean, I don't think that it's possible. And if ever I've sort of been content, I've laid back in the sun and thought, oh, this is the life. But at the same time, there's always a part of me saying, yeah, but you've got to do this in about an hour, or you've got to do something tomorrow. There's always that thing, that Greek chorus, that I can never dismiss it. And so inside, there's constantly a terrible civil war going on. I mean, even now, like, I'm questioning the things that I'm saying to you. And it's tiring. It is very tiring.
Bob Geldof talking nearly 30 years ago, and today he is still raising money for the poorest and most distressed people in the world, launching the new Band-Aid single this week. The single can be downloaded for 99 pence, and the CD with booklet will be on sale at the beginning of December, priced at £4. All proceeds from the release will go to Ebola relief, with normal VAT being scrapped on all purchases. Now for all the region's sport, here's Sinéad Monro.
Everton chairman Bill Kenwright has dismissed Roy Keane's claims that Roberto Martinez puts pressure on Seamus Coleman and James McCarthy not to play for their country. Keane sparked a row with the Merseyside club by suggesting Everton manager Roberto Martinez said players such as McCarthy and Coleman in particular shouldn't play even if they only have slight injuries. McCarthy missed Republic of Ireland's European qualifier with Scotland on Friday with a hamstring problem, promoting Keane to suggest talks were needed with his Spanish coach. Kenwright has said that Keane is out of order. Ringside tickets for the blockbuster rematch between Nathan Cleverley and Tony Bellew at the Liverpool Echo Arena on Saturday are being sold for up to £2,000. All 10,000 tickets for the event have sold out in less than 48 hours, making it one of the fastest selling events that the Echo Arena has hosted. However, now this means fans are now having to pay hugely inflated prices for tickets from third party sellers on the web. Everton Football Club legend Neville Southall made a special visit to Finch Farm to put a group of budding young goalkeepers through their paces. He now coaches children in Wales, but a collaboration between him and the club provided a unique experience on Merseyside. In total, 77 youngers aged 8 to 16 travelled to the Toffees training headquarters to undergo sessions with academy coaches, tour the facilities and then attend the first team fixture against Swansea City for free. Adam Lallana has backed Ricky Lambert to rediscover his goal-scoring touch for Liverpool Football Club and says his teammate has a lot to offer for Anfield. Lambert has struggled to capture his best form since his summer move from Southampton and is yet to score a competitive goal in 12 appearances for the Reds. However, having followed him in making the move to Liverpool in the summer, Lallana is convinced his colleague will come good on Merseyside. Liverpool are confident Mario Balotelli will be able to face Crystal Palace next weekend, with the Italian's hamstring injury not as bad as first feared. Balotelli was sent home from international duty with Italy with the problems suffered in training on Friday. It meant he missed his country's Euro 2016 qualifier with Croatia on Sunday and was also ruled out for their friendly against Albania on Tuesday night. Liverpool, though, have been encouraged by initial medical reports and Balotelli is expected to be fit for Sunday's trip to Selhurst Park.
So what's going on in the city this weekend? Indie rockers The Cortinas will return to the Echo Arena on Friday the 21st of November with support coming from fellow indie groups Circa, Waves and Blossoms. Tickets are still available and priced at £25.50. Oliver Goldsmith's comedy She Stoops to Conquer will close its month-long run at the Everyman Theatre on Saturday the 22nd of November. Tickets are still available for the final matinee and evening performances and are priced at £12 to £25. The English Ballet will close its week-long residence at the Empire Theatre with a performance of Swan Lake. The troupe of over 65 dancers will give their final performance at the Empire Theatre on Saturday the 22nd of November. Tickets are still available, ranging from £55 to the cheapest tickets at being just a fiver. American singer-songwriter John Grant will be performing at the Liverpool Philharmonic over the weekend. The former Czar's frontman will be performing with the Royal Northern Sinfonia. The event is now sold out. For art lovers in the city, the Andy Warhol exhibition will continue to be shown at the Tate. The exhibition, called Transmitting Andy Warhol, will showcase over 100 pieces of art by the influential artist, providing key insight into the famous artist's life and works. Tickets will be available for £8. That's all the latest news from us. This has been the Liverpool Life Podcast. Don't forget to tune in next week for your latest news and headlines. A special thanks to this week's editor, Luke Holliday. I've been Dan O'Brien. Thank you for listening.
This has been the Liverpool Life Podcast, brought to you by the journalism students at the Redmond's News Centre. More next week.